Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Darkness on the Fens by Joy Ellis, narrated by Henrietta Mere. Chapter 1. Jim Fortune had probably been in every one of Greenborough's 16 pubs at some time or another, but his favourite was the Hanged Man. The beer was good. It was lively without being rowdy. Being old, it had bags of character, and the landlady was a real looker. To cap it all, it was only a 10-minute walk home, so it had quickly become his pub of choice. The place had been buzzing tonight, lots of incomers trickling in, being lavish with their money. Discovering he was a local, several bought him drinks and plied him with questions about the forthcoming festival. Jim was more than happy to extol the virtues of dark Greenborough in exchange for a pint of best bitter. A kiddies thing, it had started way back, always around Halloween, although long before trick-or-treat became such big business. In those days it was simply an evening where old superstitions, ghost stories and folklore were acted out on the streets. People dressed up as ghosts or witches and warlocks, and there was music in the town square and braziers burning, and stalls selling food and drinks. It had an old-fashioned fairground appeal, lots of fun. But that was then. Now it was a big attraction, bringing in serious money and an influx of tourism. Nowadays, dark Greenborough celebrated the darker side of life and explored the town's mysterious, sometimes notorious, happenings. Old haunted houses were open to the public. Groups of ghost walkers trailed round the streets at night, led by guides carrying lanterns. Pubs and restaurants took on otherworldly themes, and old murders and terrible deeds were reenacted in makeshift street theatres, while all manner of spookily dressed street entertainers roamed around, performing for anyone who cared to watch and throw them a few coins. Jim welcomed it. For a few nights, everyone was your friend, and you could team up with perfect strangers, dance and sing and laugh until the early hours of the morning, forgetting your own miserable existence. For someone like him, a lonely man with no close relatives, no wife or significant other, it gave a sense of belonging, of being part of something for a change. Jim tilted back his head and drained his glass. He was beginning to feel the effects of all those free ales. He glanced at the big clock behind the bar and decided it was probably time to call it a day. The Hanged Man was open until midnight, but he rarely stayed beyond 10 o'clock. He liked to watch a movie before going to bed. Still, it was Wednesday night, and his temporary job had come to an end that day, which meant no work tomorrow. So, maybe just one more.
"Hey, Jim, tell us about the black dog of Gibbet Fen," one of the tourists called out.
Jim looked pointedly at his empty glass.
"Get him another, miss. He tells a great yarn, doesn't he?"
Sheila Pearson raised her eyebrows.
"Oh, yes. Our Jim does that all right."
She shook her head and pulled another pint of ale into a straight glass.
"And after this one, my friend, it's my considered opinion that you'll have had enough."
Jim grinned at her.
"This is my last, Sheila, I promise. Can't let these good people down, can I?"
He smiled innocently and turned to the three young men on the opposite side of the table.
"Now, you see, Gibbet Fen is a remote spot, close to the sea bank and the marsh. It's not the place to go on a moonless night, I promise you. Even so, some people venture up there and some have been unlucky enough to come across the Barghest, the Black Dog. Not that many lived to tell the tale, because they say that if you look into its blazing eyes..."
They were right. He did spin a good yarn. The tale of the Gibbet Fen Black Dog had never sounded so exciting. Some of it was folklore, some he'd heard from his grandmother, and some was pure invention. The listeners were enthralled. Jim looked over the top of his glass at the eager faces, and for once in his life, he felt good. It was going to be a great weekend. Starting tomorrow, 3 days of drinking and being someone. He sat back, story over, feeling pleasantly fuzzy. Sheila was right. He'd had enough. Or maybe a tad too much. He stood up a little unsteadily.
Good night, friends. Good night, Sheila. See you tomorrow. Silly sod. You take care walking home in that state, replied Sheila. Keep to the pavements and no wandering in the road, you hear me? I'm fine, he slurred. Perfectly fine.
Outside, the cold October air made him catch his breath, as if he'd jumped into the North Sea. His head spun, and he had to put his hand on the pub wall to steady himself. This was unusual. He drank regularly, and was no lightweight. Even the few extra pints shouldn't have affected him like this. Jim began the walk home. The road seemed different somehow, unfamiliar, and even landmarks he knew well seemed foreign. After about 5 minutes, he stopped. He no longer knew where he was. Where was his house? Which way should he go?
Blimey, Jim! You've had a skinful, haven't you, mate? Here, take my arm. I'm going down your way,
a man said to him. Jim muttered a few words of thanks that didn't seem to come out straight.
Good evening down the Hanged Man, was it?
The man laughed.
You better pace yourself, mate, or you'll never make it through the festival.
Jim leaned heavily on this stranger. The guy clearly knew him well, but Jim had no idea who he was. They stopped outside a small terraced house in a narrow lane at the back of the football stadium. Did he live here? He supposed that he must, because the man had propped him up against a gatepost and was going through his pockets looking for a key. Then he was opening the door. But Jim was struggling to keep him in focus. His vision was blurry, and darkness threatened to encroach.
I hate to leave you like this, but my barb'll kill me if I'm late home again. Will you be all right, Jim?
He tried to smile and said he would be fine. He just needed to lie down. His good Samaritan propelled him into the lounge and sat him on the sofa.
Get some sleep, and I'll see you over the weekend.
Then he was alone, in a room that was spinning faster and faster. With a groan, Jim sank down, closed his eyes, and passed out. Although it was many years since his days as a special operative soldier, Joseph Easter was still a light sleeper. At around 4 in the morning, he woke to hear someone softly sobbing.
Nicky?
He asked. Nicky Galina turned her face to his.
It would have been Hannah's 22nd birthday today.
Oh, my darling, I'm so sorry.
There was nothing he could do but hold her tightly. Nikki's only child had died tragically as a teenager, and she always carried the heartbreak with her. After a while, the sobs subsided, and she began to talk about the early years with Hannah, the good times, the little funny details of her childhood. Joseph let her talk, for he could only guess at the torment Nicky went through at times like this, when there was nothing to distract from thoughts of Hannah. Tamsin, his own daughter, was now married to Sergeant Niall Farrow, one of their uniformed officers, and was as happy as he had ever known her to be. Even though she was now a married woman, losing her was unthinkable. After a while, Nicky fell silent, and he realized that she had gone back to sleep. Joseph continued to hold her until dawn spread its welcoming light across Cloud Fen. They very rarely drove into work together. Few people knew that they were in a serious relationship. It would cause all manner of problems for them at work if it became known. It wasn't the most satisfactory of situations, but it helped that Joseph's home, not cottage, was just a stone's throw from Nicky's lovely old farmhouse, Cloud Cottage Farm. With no other houses close by, it was natural that they should see a lot of each other. So far, none of the higher-ups had twigged that they were more than just friends and neighbours, but they lived in fear that one day the cat would get out of the bag. If it did, their team would have to break up, they would not be allowed to work together. It was as simple as that. Today, however, Joseph had insisted that he drive them to the station in his car. Their excuse, if one should be needed, was that her mother was having some work done on hers, so she had borrowed Nicky's car for the day. He'd already texted Eve and warned her, just in case. Understandably, Nicky was still feeling pretty low. Ideally, she should have taken the day off, but with the festival looming, that was impossible. A 3-day event of that magnitude, in their town, meant big fun for most, and a nightmare for the police. As he drove, Joseph encouraged her to talk about Hannah. When she was little, I think she loved the dark Greenborough Festival even more than Christmas. Nicky smiled sadly. And 15-20 years back, this event was such fun. Harmless fun, you know. Nothing was as threatening as it seems now. The drunks were less aggressive, and I don't ever remember taking a knife from a gang of kids. Selective memory. Or were things really less violent, I wonder? Joseph said. No, it wasn't like it is today. The atmosphere was almost magical back then. Hannah used to love seeing the street traders all dressed up in fancy dress costumes. Witches, devils, ghosts, fairies and elves. And they sold such delicious stuff. There were sticky toffee apples, big trays of parkin, marshmallow cones with hundreds of thousands on top, hot dogs. Oh, and one woman always used to make these funny little cakes in the shape of pumpkins. They were covered in this bright orange icing. They were Hannah's favourite. There were probably enough E-numbers in them to keep the kids high as kites for hours. Guess it's changed beyond all recognition. Nicky nodded. You're not kidding. It's like they've taken a cute Disney film and remade it into a thriller. It's advertised everywhere now, all over the country. It's good for the Greenborough economy, though, Joseph said. The hotels and guests' house are full, and the pubs and restaurants are packed out. And then there's all the venues, market traders and street entertainments. Good for the drug dealers, the pickpockets and the muggers, too, added Nicky morosely. Remember last year? The cells were full to bursting. She sighed. What's even worse is that it's lost its magic. It's what they call progress. Joseph pulled off the Marsh Lane onto the main Greenborough Road. Not that I approve, but it has put Greenborough on the list of great British attractions, and caused the police a whole load of extra work. Cam has had to draft in uniforms from all round the division. Cameron Walker had been acting superintendent, holding the fort while the new incumbent recovered from a skiing accident. Then it was realised that Greenborough needed stability, and as Cameron seemed to be supplying it by the bucket load, he was offered the post permanently. It couldn't have been better for Nicky and Joseph. Cam knew about their domestic situation and chose to ignore it. He was an old friend and a good one. Plus, he was a damned fine super to work for. It's going to be 3 nights of hell, Nicky complained, what with drunks spewing up all over the place and picking fights and all manner of petty crime. Oh, I don't know. A lot of it is pretty good-natured fun. Niall's actually looking forward to it, Joseph said. Despite being a police sergeant, his son-in-law, Niall Farrow, was still young enough to enjoy the festive atmosphere, and Joseph knew that he would try to ensure that the partygoers enjoyed themselves in a trouble-free environment. Nicky threw him an apologetic smile. Take no notice of me. I'm just a grumpy old woman. And right now I'm wallowing in the past and resenting the new dark Greenborough. For a few moments, they were silent. 1 year, Nicky said. Anna asked for a birthday cake in the shape of a pumpkin, because she liked the little ones from the market. So I made her one. Joseph stared at her, incredulous. Nicky Galena baked a cake. Don't mock Easter. Actually, the cake itself was okay. It was my artistic interpretation of a pumpkin that failed miserably. Luckily, Martin Durham called by and saved the day. Somehow, he managed to turn my orange disaster into a ginger cat, just like the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland. Hannah absolutely loved it. Joseph smiled, but there was sadness there too. Martin had been the original owner of Knott Cottage, and had died tragically a few years back. He had been very attached to Hannah, and Nicky had been devastated. Martin was a really good cook, wasn't he? He left lots of wonderful cookery books in the cottage, and I've kept them all. The smile broadened.
But you actually baked a cake. I mean, really.
Just the once. And don't worry, it won't happen again.
I'm just so impressed. Oh, bog off. It was a packet mix, if you must know. Aha, the truth is coming out.
By the time they reached the security gates, Nicky was smiling. Chapter 2. The meeting room was packed with people waiting for their instructions for the next couple of days. The atmosphere was light-hearted, with derogatory comments about how Greenborough had become the weirdo capital of the world, and the usual suggestions for opening a book on who could grab the most goths in one night.
"Okay, settle down. We've got a lot to cover, and I want you guys out of here and on the streets ASAP,"
Niall said. Joseph still found it a revelation to hear his son-in-law speaking in such a commanding tone. Niall Farrow had travelled a long way from young, fresh-faced, boys-own adventurer to a very good, uniformed sergeant. Niall glanced down at a printout.
"First, reports of incidents from overnight."
These he listed, noting those that needed following up. Then he mentioned a few suspects known to be at large in the area. That done, he drew in a long breath.
"Now, most of you know all about the Dark Greenborough Festival from previous years, so you know what to expect. For any newcomers, it starts tomorrow, Friday, and runs through to Sunday night. It's a huge attraction that brings in a lot of revenue to the town. For the most part, the people attending are out to enjoy themselves. But a venue of this nature does attract its fair share of oddballs." "By bleeding cartload!" called out one of the older constables.
Niall chose to ignore the comment.
"It's also an excuse for every kind of street crime, especially drug dealing. You all know the faces to keep your eyes on, and the ones to watch in particular. It's open season as far as the dealers are concerned, so come down hard on anything you get intel on. We are working in close partnership with the event organisers to ensure public safety, and we want this festival to be as successful and enjoyable as possible. It's up to you to make this happen."
He then paired up the crews and handed over to Nicky for the CID briefing. Nicky still looked tired, Joseph thought. After detailing progress with the ongoing investigations, fortunately not too overwhelming, she said,
"Sultan Lefen have warned us that there's talk of a team of dips heading our way. But they aren't just opportunist pickpockets. They work with a guy called Harrison, who specialises in getting the dips to nick wallets and handbags that might have addresses on something in them. They then turn over the owner's house while they are out at the festival. He's a real piece of work, this guy. Always got an alibi. And we could well do with getting him and his mates off our patch fast."
"This kind of festival would be right up his street, boss," said DC Cat Cullen. "I've met Harrison before. He likes to prey on people in a club or a pub who've had a skinful. His favourite trick is to get one of his thieves to nick a handbag from a punter, see if there's an address in it, and hopefully a key ring. If there is, he just takes a door key and puts the handbag back, apparently untouched. Half the time, the victim has no idea what's happened until it's too late, especially if they're pissed."
"And I've had dealings with some of his crew," added DC Ben Radley. "They work in pairs. Sometimes there's three of them. It's the old distraction game. One or two keep the mark chatting while the third checks out the bag." Nicky grimaced. "As I said, any hint of their presence here and I want them gone, okay? Now, talking about presences, one of the biggest attractions of this festival is the opening of Cressy Old Hall to the public. As you probably know, the hall is supposed to be one of the most haunted buildings in the county. Yes, I know how most of us feel about that sort of twaddle, but ticket sales are through the roof."
She paused.
"There are a lot of valuable antiques and paintings there, belonging to the Cressy Lawson family who own the hall, so we need to keep a close eye on the place. I know it's not strictly a CID matter, but uniform is going to be stretched with the general stuff, and the Cressy Lawsons are friends of the Chief Constable. Need I say more?"
There were grunts of understanding.
"Actually, "It's a very interesting place," added Dave Harris with a big grin. "I'd volunteer for a shift there, boss. I've been dying to see around that old house for years."
Dave was now working with the team as a civilian, after having retired from his position as a DC. Mainly functioning as an interviewing officer, he also helped man the office when the others were out in the field. In fact, he did what he had always done, and no one felt that he had ever really retired.
"In which case, my friend, Cressy Aldhall, along with its valuables and its ghosts and ghoulies, is all yours."
Nicky smiled serenely.
"So are Clive and Priscilla Cressy Lawson, and may heaven help you." "I'll manage them," Dave replied stoically. "Can't wait."
"Then I suggest that you ring them when the meeting's over. Drive up there and have a word with them. And do make sure they realise that even though we are going to be policing an entire festival, we are taking their precious bloody artefacts very seriously indeed."
"Do I use the same heavy sarcasm, boss?"
"Perhaps it would be preferable to tone it down a tad," Joseph suggested.
"My thoughts precisely, Sarge," said Dave. "I'll say it in my own inimitable way."
"Just get the message over, Dave. Other than that, we are going to have to take things as they come. Needless to say, if we can handle things without putting extra strain on uniform, then we will. And one last thing." She smiled. "If you get the chance, try to enjoy yourselves too. It might not be the festival it was years ago, but it is very important to Greenborough. We need to get behind it and make it the best it can be."
Joseph knew that most of the officers present actually welcomed the break from the daily grind of boring petty crime. Apart from all the hype, this kind of event had a frisson of fear about it, the possibility of something unusual happening. Seeing different faces and the party atmosphere would give everyone a lift, even if only because the arrest rate would undoubtedly rise. Apart from that, everyone would be busy, and going home tired out and buzzing is always better than a long day spent behind a desk writing up reports and drinking too much coffee.
"Right, I think that wraps it up for now. So, eyes and ears open for the Harrison gang. Let's do our best to survive the next 3 days and come out the other side covered in glory."
Nicky crumpled up her crib sheet and threw it into the nearest bin. The officers dispersed, amid chatter and bursts of laughter.
"Nice rallying speech for the troops, boss."
Joseph smiled at her.
"Even if you do hate the new look bloody festival."
She raised her eyebrows.
"How I feel has nothing to do with it, does it? We have a job to do, that's all."
She turned towards her office.
"What have you got on your desk that needs tying up?"
"Mostly all sorted. Just a few last-minute reports on the burglary in Stanhope Gardens. After a couple of phone calls regarding that, I'm pretty well free."
Joseph held her door open for her.
"Want me to liaise with Sultan Le Fen about Harrison and his motley crew?"
Nicky nodded.
"Sounds like a plan. It's DS Marie Evans who passed on the info, so give her a call, and then maybe pass it all on to Kat and Ben to follow up. If they both met Harrison, that could be an advantage to us."
"Wilco, boss."
Nicky sat in the relative quiet of her office and scanned through the itinerary for the 3-day festival. When she considered what it had been, the transformation was amazing. She also had a wonderfully eerie-looking brochure that the tourist information people and travel agents sent out. The coach trips would start arriving today, bringing people from all over the country for a dose of ghostly fun. There was also a small contingent coming across from Holland, so she'd been told. She looked at the main attractions. Prominence had been given to the Greenborough Ghost Walks. They were the brainchild of the local history society, each walk led by an experienced guide with extensive knowledge of the town's history. Picturing some of the creepy old buildings and the narrow cobbled alleyways, Nicky reckoned they were probably onto a winner with that one. Plus, they finished up at the Drunken Miller pub, which not only had a notoriously checkered past as a meeting place for gin smugglers, but served some of the best pub grub for miles. Cressy Aldhall spoke for itself. It was an ancient pile dating back to the late 1500s and boasted a plethora of hauntings and ghostly sightings. It was doubly attractive because the owners rarely opened it to the public. Nicky frowned at the thought of the Cressy Lawson family.
She guessed Dave was probably one of the few people who might just get a civil answer out of Clive Cressy Lawson. He was a difficult man, whose supercilious attitude had put her back up from their first meeting. He treated the police as if they were his private army, and addressed them as such. Talk about Lord of the Manor. Needless to say, he was not the most popular landowner in the area. His wife Priscilla was possibly even worse than her husband, with her constant whining about the hardships of living in this socially deprived backwater. Poor Priscilla, the travails of having to travel miles for her Louis Vuitton handbags and Clivey's Ralph Lauren dinner jackets. Next in line on the list of attractions were two deserted and supposedly haunted World War II airfields, at one of which ghostly men in flying gear had been seen running towards the shadowy outlines of Lancaster bombers. The other boasted a range of apparitions, ranging from women driving ambulances, outriders on vintage motorbikes, to full-on air raids. Nicky had been to both in the past, and all she'd ever seen was overgrown runways, derelict hangars, and a rotting control tower. Not a long-dead airman in sight. Another popular treat for the visitors was the Murder Most Foul exhibition at the Old Town Elizabethan Wool Exchange building, which told the stories of various gruesome deaths in the local area over the ages. Nicky pulled a face, grateful that they had all taken place in the long-distant past. She skimmed through the rest of the attractions, noting several deserted buildings, an old Dockland warehouse, and an old cinema that were being opened up for various forms of ghost-related entertainment. There were competitions for the best-dressed night creature, readings in the public library about local traditions and superstitions, fortune-tellers, and a zombie-thon dance marathon. She shook her head. Who had dreamed up these nightmares? On Sunday night, the big finale would take place, with a firework display and live concert at the Greenborough Rugby Club grounds. Joseph poked his head round the door.
Got a moment.
Come in, Joseph. I'm just going over the festival attractions. I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to give the fireworks a miss.
Well, that's a relief.
She hadn't expected that. She thought most blokes liked fireworks, and the bigger the better. She looked at him inquiringly.
Like a lot of ex-soldiers, I don't hear fireworks. I hear mortars, grenades, and sniper fire. And I don't see pretty displays. I see dying comrades and screaming civilians.
Nicky could have kicked herself. I'm so sorry, Joseph. I never even thought.
Why should you? And I'm not nearly as bad as some. I just prefer to avoid them if I can. Funny, it never used to affect me, but as I get older, it seems to bother me more.
He shrugged.
Still, as I said, some of my old mates are phobic about them, especially the ones who suffer from PTSD.
He grinned sheepishly.
Like Vinny. But don't tell him I told you.
Vinny Silver? Nicky was really surprised. Vinny was a security expert and ex-special services comrade of Joseph's, who had helped them out on more than one occasion. He was tall, built like a tank, and apparently fearless. Nicky always pictured him galloping across the prairie in a 10-gallon hat and high boots.
Light a firework near Vinny, and he'll most likely lamp you one. He spends bonfire night indoors with the curtains closed, headphones on and rock music playing at full volume, and gets as drunk as he can until he crashes out.
They should be banned from residential areas and restricted to organised displays in specifically designated spots, Nicky said vehemently. I heard one of the young PCs telling his crewmate that he'd paid over 200 quid for something called a cake. Turns out it's a firework that lasts for about 2.5 minutes and has over 180 shots in it, whatever they are. Something like that belongs on Sydney Harbour Bridge, not nestling in Daddy's raspberry canes.
Well, that's settled then. We'll leave the concert to the kids and find something better to do.
He grinned lasciviously at her. She smiled back. Oh, I'm sure we'll think of something. Now, back to work, Sergeant Easter.
If we really must, D.I. Galena.
Lucas Reed crawled out of bed, trying to remember what had happened the previous night. His head throbbed, and nausea quickly escalated to full-blown vomiting as soon as he stood up. 3 trips to the bathroom later, he sat at the kitchen table, his head in his hands. Work was out of the question today. He was on a final warning already,
and this would be the final nail in the coffin.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?